Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners, and I want to especially thank Rebecca for her support. And we'll be sending along access to our premium site, as we do with all donations of $7 or more. And you can support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. Well, now it's time to get into today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This one is the Ricardo Amerigo matter. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, Pete Corbin, Dollar. I found your message when I got in, but I don't know why I'm returning your call after that lacing I took from you.
Well, at least you haven't run out on us.
Why should I?
How would you like to explain what you were doing in Port Morris, New Jersey yesterday afternoon at the scene of the so-called accidental death of your client, Ricardo Amerigo?
Oh, yeah, I thought that was you I saw in that car down there.
It sure was. Are you in your office?
Yeah, that's right. I thought you wanted
to stay
know...
there. I do want to know. That and a lot of other things. I'll see you in about an hour after I've made another call.
Okay, I'll be here.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Company. Following is an accounting of further expenses during my investigation of the Ricardo Amerigo matter. Expense account item 6. $33.75. Dry cleaning and new shirts, socks, and so on, including one pair of shoes to replace the ones I lost in the South Jersey swamp, while rescuing what I'd thought was a priceless Amati violin in a muddy tidewater inlet called Lucky Hole Creek. But when I showed it to Harry Branson at Philadelphia Mutual, well, at least he promised to have an expert look it over and pass final judgment. That's the reason for item 7, 85 cents, taxi to Harry's office in the Security First building.
Oh, come in, John, come in.
Hi, Harry. Well, what have you found out?
Nothing yet, but I should hear from the violin man any minute. John, I do hope I was wrong. Sit down.
Thanks. Harry, I could have committed mayhem when you told me that fiddle I picked up in the swamp isn't the Amati.
To think you nearly drowned retrieving it.
Oh, brother, that's putting it mildly.
But I'm sure Foresto will know.
Foresto?
Foresto Sir Nigliario, however he pronounces it, the violin man.
He really an expert?
Well, he's the one who okayed the $30,000 policy on Amerigo's violin.
Let's just hope this one's it.
Did you learn anything in Port Morris?
Only confirm what you'd already learned from Sergeant Peters down there.
That someone had sawed through some steering connection on Amerigo's car before it crashed through the bridge.
Yeah.
Still no sign of the body?
Nope.
Oh, a man named Adam Bowles called.
Oh, he's an old friend. Used to be a private detective and just can't get it out of his system.
Oh. Well, he called me, you know.
I know.
And I must confess, John, that I'm inclined to agree with him.
That Peter Corbin, Amerigo's agent, did it?
Agent and beneficiary, John. And apparently the one person who knew Amerigo well enough...
I said it to Ad Bowles until I was blue in the face, Harry, and I say it again. Too easy.
But who else?
I don't know. That's what I came back here to find out.
All the evidence...
Circumstantial evidence. The kind of man that'd be a fool to let pile up against him if he really was guilty.
Even so...
Harry, let me do it my own way, huh?
What if this Corbin tries to skip out?
Then will be the time to...
He's kidding. Yes?
Mr. Cerniero to see you, sir.
Cerniero. I knew that was it. Send him in. A man is here, John.
Foresto?
Yes, sure. Oh, well. Come in, Foresto. Meet Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, how do you do, Mr. Dollar?
You brought the fiddle?
Yeah.
Right here on the desk. Well?
Thank you. I'll open up the case.
Well, is it?
Mr. Bronson, Mr. Dollar, I'm sure.
Well? Well, Mr. Cerniero?
Cerniero. Look, you've only got to look now that I've cleaned away some of the mud and the salt from the swamp where it was found. We're lucky it did not do any real damage to change the appearance. But nobody could tell the way you gave it to me.
Well, how about now that you've cleaned it up?
Yes.
Ah, you see here. The shape of the F holes. The curve to the belt.
Yeah?
The beautiful shape. The signs of age. And above all, here, you see, the label.
Label?
Through the F hole, you can see it. There. Niccolo Amati.
Then it is Amarillo's.
Si.
You're sure, Mr. Cerniero?
The label says.
And Foresto says.
Well, look, I talked with a fiddle player in the orchestra at my hotel last night. He told me there are literally thousands of imitations of every important violin ever made, shape, size, label, and all. Now, listen, Foresto.
Yeah.
Tell me the truth. Do you really consider yourself an expert?
Well, I'm a seller of violins in my store. Violins, harmonicas, ocarinas, victrolas.
How good are the violins you sell?
Oh, some good ones. Some as high as $65.
Harry, do you mean to tell me... With all due apologies, Foresto, do you mean to tell me he was your authority for a $30,000 policy on Ricky Amerigo's violin?
Well, of course, a representative from the Wurlitzer collection in Chicago verified Foresto's opinion at the time.
See, your Wurlitzer know every good violin in the world.
Yeah, Harry, let me have it. I'll give you a receipt for it. I'll bring it back when I'm through with it.
Whatever you say, John. I assume you want to check further on the authenticity.
And you are right.
John.
Yeah.
To put it bluntly... You've still not accomplished very much insofar as Amerigo himself is concerned.
With this fiddle under my arm, I think maybe I will. See you later. Maybe Harry'd been right in the very beginning. Maybe I should have known a little more about music, or more specifically, violins. Or maybe I should have left this aspect of the case to someone else and concentrated on the disappearance death of Ricardo Amerigo. Maybe I... Expense account item 8, 80 cents. Taxi to booking agent Peter Corbin's office.
All right, Dollar, let's not waste either your time or either mine. You want to know what I was doing?
That's right, Corbin. The Amati. I found it right where you planted it, in that swamp near Port Morris.
You actually found it. What do you mean, where I planted it?
What else were you doing down there in the South Jersey swamps?
Is that where you found it?
Well, you ought to know. But frankly, Corbin... I think you overplayed it a bit when you tucked part of one of Amerigo's monogram shirts there with it.
I don't know what you're talking about. Actually, I mean it.
Then what were you doing down there? And, brother, you better make it good.
The same thing you were, trying to find out what happened to Ricky Amerigo. I tell you, Dollar, I was his best friend. It's a true fact. If his fiddle was down there, too, I didn't see it.
I wish I could believe you. But the way it looks from here, you were willing to have the Amati violin found lying out there in that salt marsh because you couldn't get rid of it without exposing yourself. It didn't put any money in your pocket the way you figure Amerigo's death will.
The way it looks from here, Dollar, that's where you're wrong.
Yeah?
Yeah, actually wrong. If Amerigo's dead, I collect in his insurance as his beneficiary.
That's what the policy says, but believe
me... All right. But you think I wouldn't collect on the Amati fiddle, whether it was found or if it wasn't found. That's where you're wrong.
What are you talking about?
Because I'm also a beneficiary to his will.
How do you know?
Because I'm not only the sole and only heir in his will, I'm also the executive of his estate, too.
Oh.
So if I was the heavy, what would I take a chance leaving the $30,000 fiddle laying around in some swamp?
Cover up?
$30,000 worth?
All right, what did you do with the hacksaw?
You mean somebody sawed up the fiddle? Oh, no, let me see.
No, easy, will you? Somebody sawed partway through a steering arm on Amerigo's car to make it crash.
Murder?
Well, that's a pretty fair question.
Oh, no, Dollar, no. Oh, no, who would murder a nice, sweet guy like Ricky? Maybe he was a drunk, maybe he hit the skids, but he had no enemies. He couldn't have.
Okay. Please.
Maybe he was just a drunken bum, worthless. He threw away a concert career, but he was still, he was a gentleman. An actual gentleman. And he was a sweet guy. Nobody could have murdered him. Oh, no, no, darling, not Rick.
Pete, would you?
Who was it? Tell me, huh? Who was the lousy punk? I'll kill him.
Okay, Pete, I believe you.
I don't care whether you believe me or not. Will you tell me who done it?
Pete. Rick. Pete, will you listen to me?
I'm listening.
Now, look here. Look here and tell me. Is this Ricky's Amati violin?
Yeah, that's it. Ah, poor Ricky. Poor drunk.
You're sure?
I'm sure.
All right, Pete, I'm going to give it to you straight.
All I ask is you
now
tell
me
who...
We don't know who killed Ricky Amerigo. We haven't even found his body. The Port Morris police are still trying, of course, but it could have been carried by the tide through that inlet, the Lucky Hole Creek, right on out to the sea. Or, of course, it may appear somewhere along the creek. It'll take weeks to search that swamp thoroughly.
Now,
anyhow,
if they do find him, I want to see he gets a decent burial. Will you promise me?
Okay, I'll try, but listen, will you? Because of the sawed-through steering arm, his death was made to look accidental. Double indemnity. And you're the beneficiary. He not only wasn't making you any money because his drinking kept him off the concert stage, but he owed you money, plenty. Now, that's a motive. As for opportunity, who else had as much as you?
Nobody, nobody, nobody. But I love the poor guy. I try to keep him alive, to get him back on his own.
You told me, and I believe you. But the fact remains that the insurance company, the police, even a pretty smart private detective I know, all figure you for number one suspect. And they hope to accumulate enough evidence to move in on you.
And you're with them, huh?
No, no.
What? Yesterday right here you told me.
Sure, I know I did. But I've had time to think it out. Now, pinning it on you is just too easy, much too easy. I'll say it to your face, Pete. You're no mental giant. But only another fool would let circumstantial evidence like that pile up against him and then commit a murder like that. I may be wrong. Lord help you if I am and find out. But I think you're clean.
I swear I am.
And I'm going to play it that way unless I find solid reason to change my mind. Because, Pete.
Yeah, Johnny?
You're the one person who can help me in this case.
I'll do anything. Actually, anything. Just ask me.
All right. Now, first tell me where you were last Friday evening when Amerigo's car made that dive off that bridge.
Alibi?
That's right, brother, and you can be sure I'll check it.
At Willie's.
All right, who's Willie?
Willie Elliott. He's a saxophone player. He's one of my clients. He was a friend of Ricky's, too.
Well, where can I find him? What's his address?
I'll write it down for you. We had a four-handed poker game.
Who else in the game?
Jerry Goldsmith, 120.
He know Ricardo, too?
Oh, yeah. Composer, conductor, violin player.
Fiddle player, huh? Who was the fourth?
Eric Snowden.
Who's he?
He's a fiddle maker. He lives at his shop. I'll write that down.
Fiddle maker, did you say?
Yeah. Here you are. Yeah, he was the sole and only man Ricky would ever let touch his Amati for repairs and fixing up, you understand?
Who else were good friends of Ricardo's?
While he was making it, plenty. Lately, nobody.
You sure?
Oh, nobody. Johnny, I know. Of course, he hung around a lot of bars. He was a regular.
Give me a list.
Well, let's see. There's a little place over on Pine Street called the Yellow Lamp.
Expense account item 9, $370. A quick sandwich for Pete Corbin and myself and a flock of phone calls to Pete's poker pals. Just to make sure they were in and available when I could get around to see them. I had to phony up an excuse for seeing each of them. A friend of Pete's just in from out of town suggested I give you a call, that sort of thing. And apparently it didn't arouse any suspicion. At least it was a start. And for the first time, call it a hunch or whatever you like, I felt I was going to get somewhere in this case. As it turns out, I was. Believe me. Johnny Dollar.
You are investigate.
Hello? What'd you say? Who is this?
You are investigate Ricardo Amerigo.
Yeah, that's right. I'm investigating the Ricardo Amerigo matter. Who are you? Hello? Hey, listen, do you have some information, a tip on the case? Who are you? Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what is this, a gag?
Yeah.
Or is this supposed to be some kind of a cockeyed threat, a warning for me to get off the case?
Believe me, this is no gag.
Hello? Hello? Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Company. Following is an accounting of further expenses incurred during my investigation of the Ricardo Amerigo matter. Expense account item 10, $21 even, for drinks, for me alone. And believe it or not, I'm cold sober. But the least I could do was buy one at each of the bars on the list Pete Corbin gave me. A list of all the places Ricardo Amerigo used to hang out before his disappearance in a South Jersey swamp. In spite of all the circumstantial evidence pointing his way, I still wasn't convinced Corbin had engineered an accident to kill Amerigo. Pete had also given me a list of Amerigo's closest personal friends, three of them. I told them I'd see them later. Meanwhile, I hoped to learn something helpful from the places where he apparently spent most of his time during his last few months on this earth. But the result can pretty much be summed up by the last bar on the list, the Hangover Club.
There you are. Cost you 80 cents.
Here. Keep the change.
Oh, thanks. Yes, just like I tell you, mister. You come in here, buy a few drinks, sit and drink them, leave.
Well, didn't he ever talk to anybody?
Not even me. Just sit here and get plastered. Told one of his friends to come in and drag him away.
Who? Did you know any of them?
Oh, sure. Willie Elliott, saxophone player at the Crystal Room.
Oh. Who else?
Jerry somebody, fiddle player.
Jerry Goldsmith. Yeah, they're on my list.
Huh?
Anybody else?
Nah. Oh, yeah, wait, sure.
His agent, Pete Corbin.
Yeah, that's... Hey, if you knew that, why'd you ask me?
I've heard the same thing exactly 20 times so far today.
Yeah, well, I'll say this for him. They must have loved Amerigo. They might have fought and argued with him when they caught him in here, but it was all for one thing, to try and straighten him out. But, mister, he was too far in.
Yeah.
Yeah, shame for a talent like him, concert violinist, to hit the skids the way he'd done, but nobody couldn't seem to help.
The story had been exactly the same in every bar on the list. Apparently, the only friends, the only associates that Ricardo Amerigo had had were those Pete Corbin had named. Expense account item 11, 110, cab fare to the apartment of William Elliott over on Callowell Street. Same story. No new names of friends or even acquaintances. He and Corbin and Goldsmith and the old English violin maker, Eric Snowden, had known Amerigo for years, good times and bad. Had all tried to help him, straighten him out, were deeply grieved over his death. Item 12, 570, cab to a suburb called Lanark to see Jerry Goldsmith, where I'll admit I expected to get the same story, the same names, no more, no less. This time I took the Amati violin with me.
Hi. Who are you?
I'm Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes, you called. Come in. Friend of Pete Corbin's, you said. Sit down.
Mr. Goldsmith, I'll get right to the point. I'm an insurance investigator, and I
came
here...
That violin case. That looks like Ricardo's.
It is.
And the Amati?
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
I found it down in a South Jersey swamp where Amerigo's car plunged off the bridge. It had been lying there, hidden by the Marche for several days.
Is it all right? May I see it?
Well, one reason I brought it along was so you could substantiate identification.
I make no bones about it, Mr. Dollar. I coveted this violin like nothing else in the world. I've played many fine instruments, Strads, Guarneri, even this, my Steiner.
I see.
But Ricardo's Amati, there was something between that violin and myself that could exist for no one else. Not even Ricardo Amerigo when he was at his greatest. And when he started his terrible downfall.
You wanted it even more, huh?
Yes, more than anything else in the world.
Enough to kill for it?
Mr. Dollar, I should kill you for even thinking such a thing. I love Ricardo.
Okay, sorry. The fact remains somebody saw it through a steering arm on his car.
I still can't believe that. No one could have killed Ricardo, no one. Only three others beside myself even knew Ricardo these past few years. Corbin, Elliott, and Eric Snowden. Pity him, feed him, clothe him. Try to fight him away from the liquor that had ruined his brilliant career, yes. Even hate him at times for what he'd done to his life, but murder...
I'm sorry.
May I?
Sure. It is the Amati.
Yes. Yes, I know it as well as I know my own. May I play it?
Sure.
Thank you.
What's the matter?
I don't know. Mr. Dollar, it isn't here. The tone, the brilliance, the response, it isn't here. Something's wrong.
You're sure this is the Amati?
Oh, of course I'm sure, but something's wrong. Something's happened to it. It isn't the same.
Well, you think the dampness of the swamp might have done...
No, you can see. It's all right, but it isn't.
Well, I don't know anything about violins.
Well, there are no cracks, no marks, no damage. Even the soundpost.
But you're sure it's Ricardo Amerigo's Amati?
Yes, I told you so. I couldn't possibly be mistaken. But something is... Mr. Dollar...
Well?
I don't know.
You know something? I don't either. I'm afraid I left Jerry Goldsmith rather abruptly and in a rather distressed condition. But I had plans, and the sooner I could carry them out, the better. Item 13 on expense account, 420 taxi fare back into town to the shop of Eric Snowden, violin maker. The only man who'd been allowed to touch Ricardo Amerigo's Amati, except, of course, for the music store owner who'd cleaned it up after I found it in the swamp. Yeah, it was possible he had done something to it that would destroy its tone. But for some reason or other, call it a hunch if you like, I hope not. Snowden's shop was located on a colorful little side street, really not much more than an alley called Eiswinger Street, right in the middle of one of the busiest sections of the city, surrounded by skyscrapers, office stores, and all the traffic that goes with them. This one little alley. Except for Snowden's place, the tiny buildings packed side by side are all residences, left over from years gone by when this was a residential section, and still unspoiled by the bustling activity around them.
Thank you, Mr. Romandy. And I'll be sure to hear you at the Academy of Music Saturday night. Sir!
Mr. Snowden?
Yes, I'm Eric Snowden, but that violin case...
I'm Johnny Dollar. I fought you.
Oh, please come in. Mr. Dollar.
That's right. It's Ricardo Amerigo's.
It's been found. Please let me...
Mr. Snowden, I'm an insurance investigator. Part of my job has been recovery of this violin.
It's possible loss was the most heartbreaking thing I ever contemplated, but you found it.
I think so.
You think? I don't understand.
Well, here, take it. Examine it.
Yes, but not here. Come, we'll go up to my workroom on the second floor, where I can check it thoroughly. I'll lock this front door so we won't be disturbed. Now, come with me, please. I can't believe it. It's so wonderful you found it. It would have been a terrible loss to the world.
Yeah, I guess so.
You're not a violinist yourself?
No. I'm afraid the only violin music I know is what I hear in...
Now, here we are.
Oh, quite a shop.
Most of the finest violins in the world have been here, one time or another. The Stradivarius of Yasha.
It was quite a shop.
The violins
the walls were lined with fiddles Prince in the making Christ and with tools. Some familiar and
I
some that were...
First time Ruggiero,
wait a minute. Hacksaws. A couple of them small and delicate.
Boy,
but one a big one and dirty. As Eric Snowden turned away to open the violin case, I ran my fingers over the blades. And there was grease on one. Axle grease.
Now here...
Well, Mr. Snowden?
Yes, Mr. Dollar. This is Ricardo Amerigo's violin.
You're certain of that?
Eh? Do you think that I, of all people, wouldn't know? Mr. Dollar, aside from Ricardo himself, I am the only person who has touched this magnificent instrument for years now. I must confess, I resent your least question of my judgment.
All right, I'll be honest with you. I don't pretend to know much about violin, so I had somebody play it a while ago.
Sacrilege!
All right, be that as it may, it didn't sound to him or even to me like a $30,000 violin.
And whom did you permit to lay hands on this priceless instrument?
A friend.
I should be horsewhipped. Only an artist, a great artist, should be permitted to handle a thing like this. But I suppose you understand that, Mr. Dollar. I don't suppose you...
Well, go on.
Mr. Dollar, someone has tampered with this.
Oh?
Of course it doesn't sound right. Did this friend of yours presume to be a violin maker, too?
What do you mean?
The soundpost, the placement of the bridge. Of course it doesn't sound right. Now, Now, why does somebody have to...
Do you want to answer that?
No, let them wait. This is more important. No wonder you or your friend or anyone else question the validity of this instrument.
Hey, whoever that is down there, he really wants you.
Look here, a simple adjustment here and here. Oh, bother.
Go ahead, I'll wait.
All right, I shall be right back.
It was a quick suspicion when I spotted the hacksaw on the wall, and I couldn't forget the warning over the phone. While Snowden waited on his customer, I poked around the shop some more, looking for goodness knows what, and I found exactly nothing. No doubt Snowden was telling the truth. Until I started to sit down to wait for him, and as I pulled over a stool, I knocked open the door of a cabinet next to his workbench. I started to close it again, and then I saw it. Hanging there on a hook was a violin. I grabbed it out of the cabinet and held it under the light beside the one in Amerigo's case. I held them up together. It was unbelievable. The shape, the color, the markings, nicks on the little pegs you tune them up with, spot of stain on the scroll, even a tiny, almost indiscernible scratch on the back, an old pencil mark on the inside near the label. It was impossible, but it was true. These two violins were absolutely identical.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, well, it's a wind-up. But believe me, a wind-up with a real twist. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Sam Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, I was curious whether anyone would seriously call their club the Hangover Club, and I found out there is indeed an establishment by that name in London. It looks like Johnny's got some good instincts and sense to double his expense account, which is always substantial, as well as his commission on the case if he's able to prove someone did it other than the promoter. Well, there's something definitely fishy with this case, and we're going to find out what it is on Friday. Well, now we turn to listener comments and feedback, starting with Rebecca, who says, Adam, I've been listening on and off since you began podcasting. I love the app and often used it for bedtime stories. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate your support. I have an email from a listener in Washington State who mentions that he subscribes to several podcasts, including many of the old ones, and he says, I may load a chunk of Great Detectives or several Johnny Dollars onto my iPad for offline listening. I also bought two apps for Dragnet and Great Detectives and often listen that way using Wi-Fi over in cellular data when in the car or walking. One thing I will mention for listeners, if you do have the app, you can press the star option, and you can download those on your app and be able to listen to them offline. So that it's not cumbersome, or you're not dependent on a Wi-Fi connection, if that's a concern. But anyway, it continues. In the beginning, I'd listen to random episodes and didn't care about original order. Lately, I've been listening to in order of your original broadcast. As such, if you're discussing listener drive or some other special type, today I won't hear for years. I don't use Facebook or Twitter much, but do allow great detectives on both every few days. But that can be cluttered looking for your items in the mass of other tweets and Facebook stuff. Perhaps my confusion is how should a new follower proceed through the episodes and still hear new or special offense things? Maybe there's already an answer somewhere that I am missing. Okay, and thanks so much for the question, Woody. And I think this is a good general question. I sent him a reply because, like he said, he might not get it if we just talk about it on the show. But what I would say if you're new to the program, and you want to go back through the archives, I'd recommend listening to our Tuesday program, whatever that is. Usually they're short. We did have Jeff Regan go about 33 weeks, but that was just because I found out there were more episodes than I knew about originally, after I'd already decided I was going to do the series. Most of them, particularly recently, have been 14 weeks or less. So you listen on Tuesdays and you can catch what the current stuff is going on and any sort of campaigns, and then just go back to the old ones. To be honest, this is probably a good time to start listening, even to other shows. We're still about a couple weeks away from getting our new Thursday show. So I think that either listen on Tuesdays or just listen to all the new shows and then work your way back to the old shows at your leisure. That would probably be my favorite approach, depending on how many episodes I had to download. I know that I did that with one of Andrew's podcasts. I was listening to his podcast of Tales of the Texas Rangers, and I got behind, and I started listening to the shows that he was then currently doing. I'd listen to one of those, and then I would listen to one or more of the previous shows to see if I'd get caught up. And that way, keep in touch with what was currently going on with Tales of the Texas Rangers. So that'd be my recommendation. And thanks so much for the email. We also received this from a Gainer who says, I love all your shows. You do a wonderful job. It reminds me of when I was growing up, my dad and I would shut the TV off and he would play these old time shows for me. Very fond memories. Well, we're glad to revive those memories for you and help other listeners make new ones. Well, that'll do it for today. We will be back tomorrow with another one of Edgar Allan Poe's great mysteries, and then join us back here on Friday when we wrap up the Ricardo Amerigo matter. In the meantime, your comments are appreciated. Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.